morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, may I reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal? My name is Greg Scaglione of the Coley Jessen Law Firm in Omaha. Present with me in court is a representative of Northern Natural Gas, James Talcott. Your Honors, I'd like to address two primary issues, legal issues, with you and provide a brief background that sets the stage for them. This was a redesign contract construction dispute. The trial judge tried to the bench, found three key issues which will lay the platform for the legal questions. First off, we argued that U.S. Pipeline did not timely submit change orders before they performed the work. The trial judge found we waived that contractual time bar because we delayed in signing change orders. So the judge proceeded to the next question. Is U.S. Pipeline entitled to additional compensation because of the redesign? He found they were. And the last key factual finding was he said the forced account work rates were triggered. That's his language, were triggered. That means the formula in the contract for determining direct damages was triggered and must be followed. It was not up to any calculation of direct damages. The trial court said forced account work rates were the one and only formula for direct damages that could be followed. The judge had previously, in a summary judgment, found that the mutual waiver of consequential damages was enforceable. So there were two contractual formulas in play that determined U.S. Pipeline's ability to recover additional comp. One was you apply the direct forced account rates and you cannot recover consequential damages. With that background, I'd like to make two quick points. It is a legal question before this court as to whether the court and the expert for U.S. Pipeline applied the forced account rates. He clearly did not. The forced account rates, which are in the contract, say you take the hours that the personnel are on site or the hours that the equipment is on site, you grab the rate, the hourly rate from the contract, and you do the math. Also, if there are invoices for equipment, you take U.S. Pipeline's cost or invoiced as is, no markup, and if there's a third party used to rent the equipment, you mark it up 5%. You do all of that math and you get a forced account damage calculation. That is the only calculation permitted by this contract. And this court has held repeatedly that the parties may set the formula by which damages can be recovered. I cite the Crowley case in our brief, among others.
Did the trial court do its own calculations or did it follow the expert from the pipeline?
He announced he followed the expert and his damage number follows the expert perfectly. So he did follow the expert's calculation.
So you're suggesting the expert did not correctly use the forced account?
Correct. And I quoted him to you both in his summary, his report, and his testimony. Here's what he said. He did not take the hours of personnel equipment times the rate and the invoices with markups on third party. He said, I did not do that. Here's what he said he did. I took the cost reported on their books. I averaged it over 141 days to come up with, I'll round this, a $25,000 per day damage. That's the per diem. He then said there was 141 days of delay. I attribute 123 to Northern. His math was 25,000 times 123 days equals the damage. That's not a forced account formula. It's a formula that is not permitted by the contract. And thus, it's an illegal, it's a legally impermissible formula to use.
So what is the dollar difference?
Well, if he used the wrong formula, we don't know what the difference is. There is no evidence in this record that would allow this court to determine the hours of personnel, the hours of equipment, and the invoices, and run the forced account rates against that. So we cannot know from this record what the difference is.
Was that information available?
Yes. In fact, if you look at change order 19, we do have the hours of personnel and the hours of equipment from October to December 19. We do have that. and we, and the math is shown. Now, U.S. Pipeline admitted that that calculation was wrong, and I cite that in the brief at Exhibit 728 at page 29. They admit that that calculation had numerous errors in it. However, they did have the hours of the equipment and the personnel. So the expert had that available and chose not to use it to come up with a more inflated number. The early number was 600,000 to 1,000,002. Then it elevated to 7.7 million, and by the time they got to trial, it was 5.3 million.
You're now arguing that the math was done wrong. Are you abandoning your argument that you shouldn't have had to pay in the first place? Or your client shouldn't have had to pay in the first place?
That is a factual question that we lost. The judge found a waiver of the time bar, so they get to ask for comp. The judge find they're entitled to comp, and the judge said they're entitled to comp under the forced account work rate. I think those are fact questions, which I can't undo. What we can do as a matter of law is ask the question, did their expert apply the forced account rate? He did not. And any formula other than the forced account rate is a contractually prohibited formula. So they have no competent evidence.
Ultimately, do you want this court to remand this for recalculation?
No, I think they had their chance to make their case, and they rested. And when you rest with a defect of damage, you do so at your own risk. They do not get a new trial. This is not the inadmissibility of evidence that should have come in or the admission of evidence that should not, so we need to go back and retry with a more clean evidentiary slate. They had their chance, and they rested. And they rested with a formula for damages not permitted by the contract. My second point is they went beyond this new formula of per diem times days, and they included separately consequential damages. And I cite their expert, who admitted inefficiencies, delays, etc., almost verbatim consequential damage language that is quoted in the contract. The contract not only says consequential damages are prohibited, they then give examples. He uses the language of the examples. And I ask him, did you even read the contract? He said, I never did. So what he did is
Are you saying the consequential damages provision in the contract replaces the common law definition of consequential damages?
I would say it can, because this court has said
But it doesn't. That's what I'm asking.
I think it can, but it didn't need to, because the examples that the contract gave of what are consequential damages are complementary and not contradictory to Nebraska law. So whether they trump or not trump, they're not inconsistent. So I think they're just elaborative of here's some examples. There's nothing I've seen in Nebraska law that says this is not a consequential damage, but our contract said it is. So whether it's a conflict or not, I don't believe is an issue. But so the $3.1 million of direct damage was calculated by an extra contractual formula, which is not permitted. The $2.6 million of consequential damage were waived mutually, and I had a summary judgment order finding that that provision, 19C, was enforceable. So the judge inexplicably allowed an award of a formula for direct damages that was not permitted, and he awarded consequential damages which had been mutually waived. And so for those two reasons, these are questions of law. We simply apply the contract. Did the parties set a formula? Was the formula followed? Did the parties waive consequentials? If they did, they don't get them. These are questions of law that I believe you should review independently. I'll speak again in a moment. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is it Ms. Nudgeon?
Perfect pronunciation.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Aisha Nudgeon. I represent U.S. Pipeline Appellee. So I'd like to begin by reminding the court as to why we are here. And that is, in October of 2014, when U.S. Pipeline was almost completely done with what was contracted to be a three-month job ending in the fall, NNG directed material design changes that added 4 months of additional work to this project, pushing it through harsh winter conditions in Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Now, NNG, knowing full well by virtue of change order 19 and ongoing discussions, the U.S. pipeline expected compensation for all this extra work it was doing. NNG directed it to go ahead and finish the expanded job, but then at the end of the day, did not pay even 1 cent for change order 19, instead withholding hundreds of thousands of dollars from final payment. So after an 8-day trial, and as explained in a very detailed findings of fact, Judge Burns found that U.S. Pipeline had been owed, in other words, Northern breached Section 11 of the agreement. It had been owed roughly $5.3 million in damages as calculated by the force account work basis. Specifically, U.S. Pipeline's actual payroll costs, actual equipment costs, actual material costs, plus contractually specified markups of 5 to 15% were applicable, that U.S. Pipeline had been due, but Northern did not pay. Now, Northern does challenge those damages on three bases, but I'd like to start on the one that Mr. Scaglione spent his time on, which is one that has been waived by NNG. This new argument raised in NNG's reply brief that Mr. Berkowitz did not properly apply the force account work basis was not one of the assigned errors in Northern's opening brief, nor was it ever raised in the trial court. We submit has been waived, but I would still like to address it on the merits. The second argument, which I will also address on the merits if time permits, is as refined by the reply brief. Northern is saying, well, with respect to the remainder of those costs, in other words, specifically the costs incurred by U.S. Pipeline because of decreased productivity, that those are consequential damages barred by the consequential damage waiver. So beginning with what Northern concedes were the direct costs U.S. Pipeline should have been awarded by the trial court under the force account work basis, I want to address these arguments, the new arguments, that Mr. Berkowitz did not apply the contract properly. And I'd like to begin with the standard of review. I think I would disagree with Northern's characterization. The trial court made a factual finding that Mr. Berkowitz properly calculated, quote, actual payroll costs, actual material costs, actual equipment costs, and then applied the contractual markups. So the standard review we submit is actually clear error, which Northern has not shown, even if the argument had been preserved. So what Mr. Berkowitz did was he took the force account work formula, which, as I said, has four buckets. Each of them is sometimes associated with a markup for a small profit and overhead. He took those four buckets of costs that U.S. Pipeline incurred in that impacted period, we're talking mid-October to mid-February, and he calculated, well, rather than just include them all, because that would be unfair, some of those would have been incurred regardless of this extra work, the late design changes. He calculated within each bucket how much U.S. Pipeline spent because of the delay, how much U.S. Pipeline spent because of lost productivity, and then as to the remainder, excluded them entirely. So Mr. Berkowitz testified, and the trial court found that he properly calculated for each of those categories what were U.S. Pipeline's actual payroll costs because of the extra work, as opposed to, say, something else. So to take an example, and Mr. Scaglione, he takes issue with the word rate. I do want to explain how the word rate is being confused here. As Mr. Scaglione pointed out, when it came to the delay costs, the ones that Northern admits are direct, but weren't calculated properly. The way he calculated those delay costs was first, he had to do a scheduling analysis to figure out, well, how many days was U.S. Pipeline out there as a result of the extra work, as opposed to how long they would have been out there regardless. So out of the 141 days that this project was delayed, he determined that only 123 of them were because of the extra work. Now, rather than reach into U.S. Pipeline's costs for that 141 days and grab a random assortment of 123 days, he had to calculate an average daily cost. That's the rate about which Northern is complaining. So he calculated an average daily cost. What did it cost these crews to be out there for every day on average?
So Mr. Scaglione's argument, I think, is that that isn't the way you agreed to come up with costs in the contract. How do you respond to that?
So the contract says when the parties can't agree on how to compensate for extra work, such work shall be paid for on the following basis. A, actual payroll costs plus markup. B, actual equipment costs plus markup, et cetera. So what Mr. Berkowitz determined, I'll just take one category as an example.
Is that information in our record?
Yes, it's on exhibit one, sorry, the contractual markup, the contractual force account rate.
No, the hourly pay, the equipment rental, that information, is that in the record?
Yes, Mr. Berkowitz relied on information in the record, which was U.S. Pipeline's cost workbooks, yes. He also, in a scheduling analysis, relied on U.S. Pipeline's weekly progress reports and Northern's weekly progress reports to determine on what day the project would have been finished had it not been for the extra work. In other words, a scheduling analysis of 123 days. So in other words, to get back to the Chief Justice's question, the contract doesn't say, here's how to calculate what were your extra payroll costs incurred because of the extra work. That's up to the contractor to figure out. And on a run-of-the-mill, normal change order probably wouldn't really have been an issue. But because of the timing of these changes, on the brink of winter and how material they were, for example, adding a 1,000 feet to an otherwise 200 feet underground drill in that terrain under those conditions, had it been a simpler circumstance, probably wouldn't have had to hire an expert to go into all the costs and pull out which of them truly were actual labor costs that were resulted from this extra work. But for him to figure out, well, so a contractor incurs two kinds of costs. The cost of delay, in other words, paying your crews to be out there, and then a separate beast, which is the cost of doing the same kind of work you would have otherwise done, but work that took you much longer because of the conditions that you were pushed into because of the design changes. Those are the lost productivity costs. So as for the delay costs, the contract simply doesn't say, here's how you calculate, quote, actual payroll costs that resulted from the delay, actual equipment costs that resulted from the delay. So the trial court properly credited Mr. Berkowitz's expert testimony on how to calculate them in their circumstance. And to be conservative, rather than reach for 123 of the highest dollar days, to be conservative, he calculated what was the average daily cost, and he multiplied it by the 123 days.
What's the lost productivity cost again? Can you explain that to me?
Sure.
I mean, isn't the hourly time they spent the time they spent? What's the lost productivity have to do?
So to include all the extra time they spent, that would have been an artificially inflated number. So Mr. Berkowitz explained at trial that there's two kinds of costs a contractor incurs. There's some things like supervision or paying for heating equipment that you can just say, oh, having it out there 10 days costs 10 times as much as having it out there one day. But there's other costs that are kind of harder to extract, and that is lost productivity. You would have had to pay your welding crew regardless, to tie in these last two crossings whenever they were done. He had to determine how much more did it cost U.S. Pipeline to have to weld under January conditions as opposed to early October conditions, which would have otherwise been the case. So for him to do that, he used a generally accepted industry standard called the measure mile analysis, and he quantified, well, how long did a particular crew take to do a particular task in the unimpacted period, say September, versus how long they were taking to do that same task in the impacted period, in extreme winter in January. That delta is what he quantified. The coating crew was taking 2 days to do 100 feet before, but now in the winter it's taking 4 days. He took that delta, and that's what he quantified as the actual cost spent out of pocket by U.S. Pipeline as a result of the slowed progress. And he, again, did this based on cost data that was in the record. And we would submit that those findings are factual findings. His calculation of what were the actual costs that fall under those four buckets in force account, which should not be disturbed other than for plain error, which we submit did not occur. So unless, I have very little time left, so unless the court has any other
questions. Can you please address consequential damages?
Sure. So we agree that obviously the contract has a consequential damages waiver in it. However, the only type of damages toward Northern now, given its pivot in the reply brief, is contending are consequential, are those lost productivity damages that I just explained. I believe its argument is that those qualify as, quote, increased cost of work, which falls in that list that comes after the words including but not limited to in the consequential damages waiver. And that issue of how to construe those very waivers has already been decided under Nebraska law. The two times this has come up, it's been in the federal district court for the District of Nebraska, very similar wording. It was waivers that said parties shall not recover consequential or indirect damages, including but not limited to, say, lost profits or, here, increased cost of work. Both times, the courts have explained that that means that everything falling after the words, including but limited to, those are barred to the extent they are, in fact, consequential. So to take the example of the lost productivity costs here, an example of what truly would be consequential is if, say, U.S. Pipeline had another job lined up after this one, but because its crews were stuck on the job for NNG, it had to go out and hire other crews at a premium to do that second job it had planned. That increased cost of working would be a consequential damage to the breach of this contract. The damages here that were awarded were U.S. Pipeline's own costs on this project.
Actual cost plus market.
Exactly. We're applicable. So we ask that this court please affirm the district court's judgment. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 4 seconds. We'll actually give you 2 minutes, Mr. Scaglione.
Thank you, Your Honor. I may not need them all. 4 quick points. One, the issue on what is due under the contract under the force account was raised. It's assignment of error number 2. It's argued in the opening brief from pages 28 to 34, and it's elaborated in the reply brief. So wherever you see me arguing that something was awarded that it was not due under the contract or did not follow the contractual formula, is the argument. Second point, the contract's clear. Here are, I'm showing you page 62A and 61B of the contract. Schedule of labor rates, superintendent, hourly rate, $209.36. Foreman, $179.57. You take the, depending on what personnel was there on that day, times the hours they were there, and you multiply it by that rate. Berkowitz did not do this. We have a schedule of equipment, a hydraulic testing equipment, low head pump. Not sure what that is, but we pay $52 an hour. So they have to show that was there on the project in use for these hours multiplied by that rate. He did not do that. The other thing he did by
I'm sorry to interrupt. Did you object to the experts? Opinion on the basis that it was applying, that the expert was applying the wrong formula.
I did. I objected on 401 and 403 that his extra contractual formula is irrelevant under 401 or minimally relevant, highly prejudicial under 403, and I got a standing objection. And I renewed that objection and then moved to for directed verdict. Furthermore, I cited a case.
There was no foundational objection made, though.
I don't think it's a foundational question. I think he's qualified, and I think he's probably qualified to talk about other formulas. My objection was any formula other than forced account is irrelevant, and Judge Burns agreed that forced account was the only formula triggered. That's what he said. Third point, lost productivity, which she just mentioned, and inefficiencies are per se consequential damages. They're per se consequent. That is the definition of consequence. Is it was less efficient for me to do the work. The direct damages are I had crew and equipment on standby waiting for your designs. That's direct. Lastly, Your Honor, interesting question for first impression for you. I cited a federal case. What is consequential damage or what is direct damage? Is that a fact question or a legal question? I cited authority for you in federal court that says that's a legal question for the trial court to decide what is consequential or direct, and for this court to review independently. I've not seen the Nebraska Supreme Court rule on that issue. So I do not believe that is a fact question. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. That concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.